Hi, welcome to another show of Beyond Averages, our weekly data podcast where we bring you news by breaking the big numbers behind the story. This week, we'll be discussing tariffs and India's protectionism over the last decade. In a week from now, India may either find itself breathing a sigh of relief or becoming a target of reciprocal tariffs unleashed by President Donald Trump. We have Amitendu Palit, senior researcher, Institute of South Asian Studies, National University of Singapore, and Gaurasen Gupta, chief India economist, IDFC First Bank. But before we move to our experts, let me set the context. Trump's entry into Washington has upended the global trade order. The US is using its position as a superpower to rewrite the rules, and Trump has a very transactional approach. The target of his ire have been Canada, Mexico, China, EU. India has been called out as a tariff king and unfair, but has escaped any direct levies till now. But why is India a concern? Let's look at the data here. If you look at where tariff prices have moved over the last few years, and you look at how things have changed, what we looked at was the tariff line of products across, tracking from 1990. Here, the blue represents decreases in tariffs. So 64% of the items looked at a decrease between 1990 and 96. 2004 and 99, which was Vajpayee's first term in office, this was about 60.3%. And the UPA years was 84.3% decline in tariffs and just a 3.5% increase. Come to 2023 and 2013, and 22.2% of the items witnessed an increase in tariffs, while 9.4% witnessed a decrease during this period. Let's move to another aspect on this part. Look at how tariffs have changed over a period of time from another perspective. If you look here, this is the era 2018 to 2022 when Trump first came to power that tariffs have really gone up. This also aligns with the PLI and other initiatives to push for Make in India. The other push for Make in India comes right here, and then there's a decrease here. So India started changing on the tariffs part right from 2022-23. This year in the Union Budget, the government reduced tariffs on a lot many things, reduced the tariff lines as well, and the 150%, 125%, 100% tariffs are gone. They've been reduced down to 70. Let's move to our experts to understand what has happened over the last decade and what does it mean for India. Amitendu, I'll go to you first. Has protectionism really helped India? 2013-2023, we saw tariffs go up on a lot many products than the products that witnessed a decrease. Has that helped in certain regard? Because we had Make in India around that time, and now there's Make in America, and are they clashing?
Thank you, Ishan, for having me on the show. I want to just begin this discussion by drawing your attention to the fact that if you look at the period during which India's tariffs actually came down most substantially, that was a period beginning from the late 1990s till up to about the end of the next decade, and maybe moving into the early part of the next decade, just before you begin in your frame of reference 2030, so before 2013. And one of the major reasons why Indian tariffs actually came down during this point in time was India's active engagement in a large number of free trade agreements. So this is the time during which we have seen substantial amount of decline in tariffs through a range of comprehensive trade treaties that India signed, mostly with Southeast Asia and Northeast Asia, including Japan, Korea, Singapore, Malaysia, and so on and so forth. And parallelly, there were reductions that were brought in through the MFN system of the WTO. But if you look at the MFN system, there's an interesting part here. India is actually allowed to keep its bound rates on tariffs pretty high across a large number of items. So, for example, agriculture. India's average MFN bound rate, what it is allowed by the WTO, is more than 110%. It's a different matter that India's applied tariffs are on an average at around 39% in agriculture. Yep. Within this agriculture space are obviously items that are of interest to Mr. Trump specifically and a large number of other countries, including dairy and so on and so forth. But to answer your question specifically, 2013 onward, the fact that India did increase its tariffs had much to do with two factors. One is the one that you have mentioned, make in India, which would mean protecting domestic industries and allowing them with space to grow, so creating some tariff wars. But it is also important that during this period in time, India actually did not enter into any major FTA. The only FTA in which India was engaged was the RCEP, from which India subsequently walked out. So it was only 2022 onward that there are other FTAs that have started coming in with Australia, UAE, and so on and so forth, and some reductions have been seen. Whether the question of this has helped in any way in terms of creating tariff wars depends on which particular indicators we're looking at. I'll not go into the macroeconomic specifics of it, but my understanding is that to some extent, this entire system has created complications. The complications mainly arise from the fact that tariffs have, and this is something which very luckily has been addressed in the last budget, higher tariffs did create something that we call an inverted duty structure. So you end up having a situation where the imported inputs and intermediates are actually more expensive than the products in which they are being used in terms of the tariffs being levied on two sets of items. And this has increased domestic cost of production. So probably that is one of the reasons why it did not really enable a lot of Indian products to have as quick and seamless access in global value chains as many other competing products from the rest of Asia have come. The good point now is that this is something which needs to be addressed effectively.
Gaurav, let me move to you. You are an expert on the Indian economy part as well. Right. Have tariffs really helped? Because if you look at manufacturing, if you look at PLI schemes, it's worked in certain sectors, it's not worked in certain sectors. Right. And Make in India has its ebbs and flows all over the period. So have they worked, or has turning protectionist actually hurt India over the last few years?
So one point regarding your first question regarding that time period between 2013 to 2023, when India did increase its tariffs, and we did see a slowdown in our goods export growth. But from it slowed down from almost 18% growth in the previous 10-year period to around 4.4% in the current, that 2013-2023 period. But also, you have to keep in mind that global export growth during that period also slowed down substantially. A similar extent of slowdown, world export growth during that period slowed down from 10% to around 2.8%. So it's not, yes, I completely agree that the tariffs did add to complications, but India's export growth was also in line with the fact that we had a slower global economy, and a lot of the China growth that we saw via exports took place at a time when global export growth was very strong. It was able to take full advantage of a younger demographic. India is now trying to boost its exports in a global economy which is older, and it will be more slower growing. For example, during that period, the previous 10-year period, China was able to clock around 10% real GDP growth. Now itself, China is aiming for a softer growth of around 4 to 5% as its own economy is aging. So right now, I would say we also have to acknowledge the fact that we'll have to boost our export performance in a slower global environment. The other issue, apart from tariffs, which might have hampered our ability to increase our market share, India's market share of merchandise exports in global exports has stayed stagnant to around 2%. We've not been able to increase it. If you look our services side, we've actually seen a gradual increase to 3% plus in overall world exports. We are increasing gradually our services export. This also shows that on the services side, we have a comparative advantage, the language, the labor, the software skills, which is our natural advantage. And we are seeing every single month, India's services export growth is picking up, even though it's picking up in a slower growing global economy. The manufacturing side, apart from tariffs, I would also say ease of doing business. That is one of the reasons why it's tougher for us to enter global value chains. For example, if you look at China, China in the first phase of President Trump was targeted, was the primary target, I would say, from 2017 to his tenure till 2020. But you look at China's trade surplus, despite that protectionist measures by President Trump, China's trade surplus has continued to rise. So if you look at the regional distribution, China's trade surplus with Asia picked up, while China's surplus with US went down. So China's exports still reached the US, but they went via different countries because China is so integrated in the global value chain.
So coming back to that point, and Gaurav, this question goes to you first because we just had that part about global supply chains. Vietnam is better integrated, certainly, in global supply chains that India is. So have we lost out, certainly, on that China plus one strategy that we were talking about a year and a half or 2 years ago?
We've not been, I won't say lost out, but we have not been able to capitalize. Lost out would be the fact that, you know, we definitely can make reforms, ease of doing business. So companies find it profitable to shift their part of their production centers to India. So I wouldn't say we've lost out. We've not been able to capitalize. You see other countries that have been able to increase their market share with the US. Like if you compare to, before President Trump, let's say 2016 to 2024 currently, Vietnam has been able to increase their market share. Mexico has been able to increase its market share. Even European Union, their market share in U.S. Imports has picked up. So I wouldn't say it's an opportunity lost. It's an opportunity which we've not been able to capitalize. And ease of doing business would be one of the key.
Before I move to you, let me show you one other data point which is very interesting here. And that would... So we are looking at the comparison on how many categories looked at an increase in tariffs and how many categories got a decrease. Here is India, if you look at it. And India, 22.2% and 9.4% saw a decrease, as we discussed. Here's Vietnam. Vietnam also saw an increase in more categories than a decrease. And Indonesia is on the same plane. China, EU and US have seen more decreases than increases during this period. Amitendu, I would like to come to you. Vietnam also increased tariffs on a lot many categories during this period. What's so different about this trajectory? So did Indonesia.
As I was mentioning earlier, Vietnam, in contrast with India, is a country which is actually part of deep free trade agreements. So, for example, it is part of a free trade agreement with the European Union. It is part of the RCEP. It is part of the ASEAN Free Trade Agreement. And it is also a part of the Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership, CPTP. Now, across all these agreements, Vietnam has committed to market access. So it is in the process of bringing down its tariff, but there is one caveat here. Vietnam is typically one of those countries which is considered a weaker economy, a relatively weaker economy in terms of the degree of development experience that it has. And practically in all these free trade agreements, Vietnam has got the flexibility to choose its own line of reducing tariffs. So as a result, at a given point in time, you might actually see, taken on average, Vietnam's tariffs looking to be much higher. On Vietnam has increased tariffs in certain areas because it has the flexibility of doing so. But what is interesting is that Vietnam has very carefully walked its steps along with certain other countries insofar as protecting its supply chains is concerned and its competitiveness there is concerned. And here, in this context, I'd like to come back to the question that you raised first. You checked whether we have lost the China plus one advantage. I would argue we lost the first part of the China plus one game. The first part was the pre-COVID game. And we did indeed not succeed in capitalizing on the opportunities that we had over there, because a lot of investments that moved to Vietnam pre-COVID were actually a result of the first round of trade war between US and China. That itself led to a lot of relocation of supply chains and investment. What we have seen later post-COVID, when politically, actually, a China plus one strategy of de-risking and diversification started coming into shape. That is actually the phase when India did not do too badly. And it did not do too badly, not because of reasons of competitiveness alone. It is essentially because trade became a part of a geo-economic packaging and a perspective on a lot of countries. as a result of which you see strategic industries, for example, smartphones, shifting production into India. But smartphones are strategic, iPhones are strategic, semiconductors are strategic, maybe chemicals are not, right?
Yeah.
So you have PLIs across a range of industries. The ones where success has demonstrated are the areas that are more strategic. And those clearly have been pushed by a geopolitical urge, by a group of countries working together to collectively guarantee security for investments once they relocate. But it's not been a question of India becoming a broad-based location where there is across the board greater competitiveness that is allowed. And as a result of that, all the investments thinking of relocation will move to India, because we have seen that happening in various parts of the world. You know, some have moved to Morocco, some have moved to Vietnam, some have moved to Poland, some have moved to Mexico as part of the China Plus One strategy. So I think we are still in the game, which is the current phase of the game. But our abilities and comparative advantage here are going to be limited to a few industries, not all industries. And that's something which we need to accept as we move along.
From what you said, it seems as if we are falling into the same trap that we did earlier also. It's like history is repeating itself, kind of. When we moved over to liberalization reforms, it was more haphazard in its manner. Now that Trump is changing the world order, we are moving into a lower tariff regime across, moving into more FTAs. Again, it seems more haphazard. Would I be right in making that assessment, or is it more a carefully thought out strategy like what Vietnam did?
Look, if you look at the trajectory of the trade and economic policy that we have been following over the last one decade and a half, and I would say essentially after the transatlantic financial crisis, globally, it's not just India, globally, industrial policy has made a comeback. And this industrial policy is essentially focused on creating national champions. So the idea is that there would be certain behemoths, oligarchs, in certain key strategic sectors of the industry, which could be infrastructure, which could be strategic manufacturing. These are industries which will at least be tacitly supported by government from a policy perspective for their growth and continuous growth. This has been happening worldwide. India's industrial policy is not an exception. And for that objective, a certain degree of on-border protection through tariffs has been provided. But the funny part is, if you look at other policies, India's foreign investment policies are very liberal. So this is typically that case where you are expecting an investor to actually come into India and invest because of the high tariff points. Because it is a realization on part of the investor that high tariffs don't make it sensible to export to India. Rather, it's a better call if you go into India and invest. And that is what is enabling the growth of national champions. Now, this is a global policy. This is a global policy which we first saw in the 70s and 80s. That is how, you know, TSMC developed, Japanese majors developed.
Korea the Chaebols of Korea.
Chaebols and, yeah, exactly. Chaebols and Kiritsus and those in that part. Then economic globalization pushed this out because of horizontal comparative advantage efficiency. Now there is a comeback. The United States is doing this. China is doing this. Even European Union, through the Draghi report, has started focusing on internal industrial competitiveness. So I won't say India was out of sync. The question is that whether we have been able to obtain what we thought we will obtain as a result of that. I believe as of now, it is not easy to reach a conclusion on this subject. But we will need to wait and watch and see which direction we actually move to from here.
Let me take you to another data chart, and this is another interesting aspect on why Trump is so angry with India. Look at average tariff changes over 2023 and 2013, and this correlates to what Amitendu was saying a while. Cereals have seen an increase, which Trump doesn't like. Dairy has seen an increase. Vehicles have seen an increase, which Trump doesn't like. Right. So these are the items that have actually seen an increase, the highest increase amongst these tariff categories. Sugars, which is another major US export, has seen an increase. Now, let me get to what's gotten more expensive as well. So we looked at the same categories and where tariffs have increased, and we found out that about $30 billion of trade here has gotten more expensive, which is 5% of imports of all these countries. And if I look at India here, Again, this is one of the reasons that we're facing the ire is 19.4% of the goods here have become more expensive, 12% in terms of Indonesia and 10.7% in terms of Vietnam. I'll go back to you, Gaurav, on this part. There's a very transactional Washington, and you were talking about a comparative advantage part. Where does India's comparative advantage lie besides the services exports that we do in a transactional world?
I wouldn't say comparative advantage is the right term. I guess the right term would be what can India offer for us to basically avoid this reciprocal tariff. So we can definitely offer them, let's say, higher crude oil imports from the US. And India has been doing that. Even during the first term of President Trump, India did improve their crude oil imports from the US. In fact, one of the largest imports that India does do from the US is fuel, and also offering to reduce our tariff differential on certain products. For example, that metric of India's, for example, if you look on a sort of a simple average basis, the tariff differential is around 10%. On a simple average basis, not on a trade-weighted basis, overall. And there's certain sectors which you highlighted that has angered Trump, like, for example, our tariffs on agriculture products. We can offer to reduce the tariffs because the demand for these products are largely inelastic. So the impact on us, basically, will be minimized. For example, if you take the products where India's the interest rate, the tariff differential is more than 10%. The share in our total, imports is not much. For example, it's maybe roughly around 4%. So we won't see that much of a negative impact by offering a reduction in tariff in certain areas. India, to be honest, in this whole trade war scheme of things, though we do come up because of the tariff differential being one on the higher side, but we are not the major pain points. India only accounts for around 3% share in US imports. The real targets are, let's say, Canada, Mexico, the European Union, which have double digit share. India is a much smaller player. We look like we come up in terms of headlines because of the tariff differential in certain products such as food exports, agriculture products, animal exports, textiles. These particular categories, we are on the higher side, but we are not the major pain point for the US. So it will be, I think, relatively easier for India to reach an agreement with the US. And we can definitely offer them, let's say, higher crude oil imports, also reducing some of the tariffs on these agriculture products without taking much of a hit. The real hit to India will come from the fact that this time the trade war is much more broad-based. Last time's trade war was China only. So China was able to circumvent it via reallocation of global supply chain, getting its exports to the US via other Asian countries. This time they have learned, the US learned from their first trade war. So this time they're targeting a larger set. So this particular trade war can result in a softer growth in terms of global GDP, global trade, and that actually indirectly will have an impact on our growth, because if the world economy grows at a softer pace, it will definitely impact our export growth. But the good news is we are a domestic demand-driven economy, so the impact will remain limited.
Amitendu, last question, and I'm merging two into one. What does a transactional Washington mean for India from a very geoeconomic standpoint, one? Two, what does a slowing global trade mean for the Viksit Bharat goal, where you need to grow at about 7 or 8%? Because China had that advantage of global trade growth of about 5.5 to 7% during that period when it grew 10%. So what does it do to our goals, and how do we parlay with a transactional Washington, which is much more focused on the money aspect of getting the money out?
Well, I think India has two challenges here. The first challenge is that the United States is clearly following a strategy of economic isolationism. And it is doing so deliberately because it has worked out its strategies. It is well aware of what its worldview is insofar as its engagement with the rest of the world is concerned. And it is using its domestic market in a geoeconomic sense as the biggest source of projecting power, brute power, if one can think of it that. Now, India here, when looked at it from the other side, has to balance on two sides. The first is it needs to continuously engage with the United States on a bilateral basis. That engagement is totally on it. It is doing so in a variety of strategic areas, but also more fundamentally in the area of trade. There are trade agreement bilateral specifics of which are being worked out. But aside of that, there is the strong possibility that India will need to also unilaterally respond to certain unilateral measures taken by the United States. So, for example, if the reciprocal tariffs come and India is expected to be among the receivers of that, then India will need to retaliate in some respect. But while doing that, and this is where the catch comes in, while doing that, India cannot afford to absorb the costs of economic isolationism the way the United States is prepared to. India is not the United States in that regard. So India needs to maintain its strategies open on the other side and stay engaged with other major powers, like, for example, the European Union or other middle powers with whom it is engaging across trade agreements, and demonstrate to them that what it is doing with the United States by way of retaliation is a one-off thing. It does not mean India is an economically isolationist, principle-oriented country. This is not easy. This is not easy because it is the same negotiator who will have to wear completely different hats for two kinds of negotiations. That is challenging. And coming specifically to Viksit Bharat, Ishan, I think the biggest challenge that India is going to face, along with most other economies in the world right now, is inflation. Because already the supply chains are beginning to get upended on a series of back and forth measures that have been announced. They were already in stress because of the Middle East conflict, because of the Russian conflict, because of the lower flow of water in the Panama Canal, and so on and so forth. Now the tariffs have come on top of it. And the worst part of all this is that there are pockets of conflict generation in the whole story. So, for example, if some action of Trump creates some counteraction politically in South China Sea, that is something which the supply chain managers cannot handle. They're not handled because, you know, you can handle an announced military drill by arranging your inventories and containers in that kind of a way. But you cannot handle an unexpected 24-hour notice military drill, might be a proxy drill. So I think these are the factors which are really going to hit the global inflation scenario hard, the cost of shipping hard, and the cost of calculating inventory management hard for supply chain managers, including the supply chains which India is now hosting significantly at its end, smartphones, automobiles, pharmaceuticals, so on and so forth. And one very last quick point, Ishan. You know, we know pharmaceuticals is one industry where over-the-counter drugs has been India's major exports over a long time, and a bulk of it is actually sourced from China. Now, the question is, China will also retaliate, as it has, on US tariffs. The point is whether it will just isolate United States products for the tariff action, or is it going to be a generic action? If you look at it from the Indian side, India actually cannot retaliate just on US exports. That is anti-WTO, right? You take away the MFN part. India, if it retaliates, has to retaliate on a generic exports. So that is the bigger challenge which is now coming out. So if certain countries, Australia, for example, has not reacted to United States tariffs, if Australia now comes back to an India and say that, look, we were planning to take this to the WTO, you and I are FTA partners, we could have sorted this in the WTO, why did you generically raise tariffs? Yeah. This kind of a strategic response is not going to be easy to handle.
Got a last question to you, similar point. What do we need to do to get to the Viksit Bharat goal? And is that a slip in the growing trade tension environment?
The Viksit Bharat goal is basically to become a developed country by 2047. So the government of India is aimed for a per capita income. The aim is to increase our per capita income to around $14,000 from the current, which is around $2,600 or $2,700. So it's over a long time frame of around 24 years. It requires our nominal GDP to grow around consistently by around somewhere between 9 to 10% in nominal terms. And the challenge is that given the, I think the real challenge, the goal, I would say it's not that difficult to achieve. The issue is the fact that as we progress in time, we are part of those changing demographics, where we are part of a global economy where the demographics are going to only get a bit worse. The only exception to the rule is India, where our demographic dividend stays in place for at least another 25 years. By demographic, I mean at the median age of India continues to go lower and lower, and we are positively adding to our working age population. So yes, I agree, the tariffs, which is right now topical because of President Trump, but I think for Viksit Bharat, more important is job creation. How we will absorb the fresh addition of people to the labor, to the labor force every single year. That will be the key to unlocking Viksit Bharat. Actually, that will be the key to unlocking the demographic dividend. So job creation, having a suitably skilled labor force. So there's a lot of fundamental reforms that we can do domestically. We don't have too much control of what's happening on the global trade front. For example, every time there is a regime change in a particular country, we get thrown in this sort of a chaos. But for such long-term goals, where we are trying to increase our per capita income, move from a developing nation to a developed country, we need certain human capital reforms and the ability of the economy to actually absorb the addition to the labor force. I'll give you one statistic. Agriculture employs around 40% of our labor force. Yep. They produce only 15% of our GDP in terms of share. Yep. That's the problem. We need to increase the productivity of agriculture. It will increase the per capita productivity of the individual. That will increase the per capita income. I'm done.
Thanks a lot, Amitendu. Thanks, Gaurav, for the enlightening discussion. We'll be back with you next week. Thank you, guys. That was this episode for Beyond Averages. We'll be back with you next week for a new episode discussing new things and breaking down new numbers for you. Thank you.